This show furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervie. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Kerry Kasem. Kerry brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervie and Kerry Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles. And everyone listening all over the world on KBC.com. I am Alan Gervie. I'm the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn. And today, as usual, I'm here to be the managing partner of your life. And with me today is Kerry Kasem.
Yeah, hey, here I am.
You are here. Good to see you again, Kerry.
Good to see you too, Alan.
So, you're just saying that.
No, you actually worked out really early this morning. I was very happy.
How do you know that?
Well, because you said I'm going in with my trainer now. It was 7 a.m. I was on the elliptical.
You were, and yeah. I was impressed with that. Yeah. We were texting at 7 in the morning, and good old Sean was taking care of me to make sure that I'm in tip-top shape, because you never know when you're going to have to be able to defend yourself against some criminals or something.
Like physically? Oh, no.
Physically. Yeah, we've got a great show today. Later in the show, we are going to talk to Nan Twigg. She is of Live PD, Women on Patrol, and that is a show on Lifetime. It just really started. The show Live PD has been on for a while. This is Women on Patrol, and Nan is one of the police officers who will tell us about that series, and we'll talk to her a little bit later. But first, we want to start with something that is so intriguing to me. I absolutely love this concept for this show that will be premiering on the Oxygen Station on Monday, this coming Monday, June 25th at 9 p.m. on the Oxygen. It's called In Defense Of. And what's really interesting about this show, and Kerry, I think you'll find this very interesting, is it's produced by a company called Magical Elves.
I've heard of them.
You have? Well, yes. I have too. And I have to tell you, this is really, I don't know if it's embarrassing or I'm just having a little therapy session today, but about 8-9 years ago, I was interviewed by Magical Elves for one of their television shows, a reality show called Arranged Marriages.
Oh, right. Yeah, I remember that.
You do remember?
Yeah,
you weren't there.
I remember it.
I actually signed a contract. I was single back then, and I actually signed a contract saying that I would marry the person who I was being fixed up with. Magical Elves, yes. And the girl was from New York. I read about her. And the whole show was about, my whole family was going to fly out to New York and interview her and her family. And she was interviewing my family. And they were going to set up the marriage. And I had to, as a contract, a binding contract, enforceable in the courts of law, say that I would marry her if she and her family decided that I would be her husband.
And so what happened?
Well, I walked the other way at some point. I think, I don't know if the show ever went forward. I don't know what happened to it. But I had had my final interview. I was supposed to fly to New York, and then I never heard from them again. And my family said, please do not call to, you know, do a follow-up to find out. So Magical Elves, and it's interesting because Jane Lipsitz and Dan Cutforth, who were behind the show In Defense Of, also were part of the show Arranged Marriages. And they did Chef and Project Runway. So these are some really great producers. I'm not going to, you know, vouch for Arranged Marriages. But In Defense Of, so think about it. I'm a lawyer, and people come up to me all the time, and they say, what's it like representing this client or representing them? All of the television that we see is usually focused on the victim,
sure,
on the client, especially in criminal law. They talk about what this sociopath or the murderer or the accused or whatever the crime, white collar crime, whatever it is, it's always talking about that. This show gets into the minds of the lawyers who represent these notorious murders. There's four shows. It's premiering their standalone episodes. And we are privileged today to have with us Ann Bremner and John Henry Brown. Now, Ann Bremner has been on the show quite a few times, and she is an amazing analyst, media analyst, television commentator, an amazing attorney. She has a background as a deputy prosecuting attorney specializing in sex crimes. She's represented a number of people, and she's also been involved as a spokesman for Friends of Amanda Knox. We had a show on Amanda Knox, and she was involved in the Scott Peterson case in the media. Casey Anthony, Michael Jackson, all of those people. She is known around the country as one of the top commentators and attorneys in the country. Seattle Magazine voted her one of the 25 Seattle's most influential people. And then, of course, there's John Henry Brown. Now, John Henry Brown is featured in defense of. He is one of the four attorneys. He has been on our show as well, had a great show on Ted Bundy. He represented Ted Bundy for many years. He's also represented Staff Sergeant Robert Bales, who was involved in the murdering 16 Afghans, being accused U.S. soldier known as the Kandahar Massacre, the Barefoot Bandit. Benjamin Ng, Martin Pang, a lot of well-known cases. He's tried over 250 cases. And in fact, Peter Van Sant calls him the most famous lawyer in America. John Henry Brown and Bremner, welcome back to LeGurvy's Law.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. It's such an honor and a pleasure.
That's for me, too. I think Ann and I should do a show called Disorganized Marriage.
That's funny. I love that because what the listeners probably don't realize is that at one time, John Henry Brown and Anna Bremner were married. I mean, if you talk about a power couple, that is the epitome of the power couple. And John Henry just mentioned that maybe it wasn't an arranged marriage, but at the same time, these two have so much respect for each other, even though they're no longer married.
That's how it should be. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We get along much better now.
Good.
You know, it's interesting. I read somewhere that Anne said that she learned so much from you, John, when you were married, watching how you handled cases and your dedication, your commitment, your preparation, your techniques. And, you know, I would love that in my marriage if I could, you know, learn about my job at home.
Yeah, well, you'd have to find a better tutor than me, I think, on that one.
Well, that's not what Anne
says. You're awesome. No, he did. And not only that, I learned a lot from John long before we were married. I applied for a job with him when I was in law school, but I learned a lot also about dealing with the media from John. In fact, I've said everything I learned about dealing with the media, I learned from John Henry Brown.
And, you know, it's interesting because when you talk about it, there's different ways of approaching the media, especially in these high-profile cases. And when we look at in defense of, we are looking at an ability for lawyers to talk about their clients and divulge information that they couldn't divulge at the time. John, tell us how you're able to now, obviously many years after Ted Bundy's execution, talk about what he said to you, because in the episode, you really disclose a lot about your conversations, which are incredibly compelling.
Well, that's a very good question. I'm glad you asked me, because I just came back yesterday from New York about a media swing on all this stuff, and with the other lawyers, and was very impressed with them. And I didn't know them that well, but now I do. And I'm glad you asked me the question, because that hasn't been brought out a lot. And that Ted Bundy actually gave me a written release of the attorney-client privilege about 3 years before he was executed. So otherwise, I wouldn't spend that much time talking about the details of what he told me. And the other attorneys in this show, one of them, Kurt Mooney, who represented Jody Arias, actually wrote a book about it and was disbarred.
Wow.
But he actually asked to be disbarred. And it's a fascinating show, his show. And I was a little judgmental about him until I saw the show, until I spent 4 days in New York, and I completely understand why he decided not to be a lawyer anymore.
Well, I just want to know why somebody would want to be disbarred. Can't you just stopping lawyer? Why do you want to be disbarred?
It's funny because we had Effley Bailey on the show a couple years ago, and Effley Bailey was saying she did everything to not be disbarred.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, no, I think Kurt got cancer, right? Jodi Arias went on the air with 48 Hours and a bunch of other things right after she was convicted and basically blamed him for losing the case and saying all kinds of things about him, which turned out to be completely untrue. Then Kurt was diagnosed with stage 3 cancer, and he basically said, well, if I'm going to die, everybody should know the truth. So he wrote the book knowing that if he wrote the book, he would most likely be disbarred.
And he was a public defender, too, so he may have been thrust into the spotlight. It was, of course, the brutal murder of Travis Alexander, the ex-boyfriend of Jodi Arias. And he has said in defense of and in the media that he believes that the stress did cause him to get cancer, at least contributed to his cancer. Do you agree with that, Anne?
Yeah, I would think so. And I haven't read his book yet, but I've corresponded with him, and I watched and covered a lot of that trial, and it was like involuntary servitude after a while. I mean, he couldn't get out of the case, and, you know, she was thwarting him at many turns, a very difficult client, and it was a horrific case, as we all know. And so I get what John says, is that, you know, he writes a book knowing he's going to be disbarred, and he's making a statement.
Yeah,
I mean, he'd had it, and he gets cancer. I mean, it's just the whole thing all around is.
I mean, obviously, it's a medical issue, but of course, stress does contribute. I think people would agree, the doctors, the medical would say. And when you're talking about the levels of stress, and we have to take a quick break, but, you know, we can talk to John Henry Brown about the stress that he experienced, because I know he has been on the record as well, saying how difficult the complexities of representing someone where he didn't like. I mean, one of the lawyers, Chris Tritico, talks about actually liking Tim McVeigh, thinking he was a good guy. He says, I wouldn't have Thanksgiving dinner with him, but I liked him. John Henry Brown says, maybe not so much Ted Bundy. So I want to get your comment on that, John, after the break. We have to take a quick break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Paint pros know a lot about painting. It's why they're called pros, but their secret's out, and it's now at the Home Depot. Professional quality PPG Timeless paint starting at just $33.98 a gallon. With complete one-coat coverage, interior and exterior, PPG is a brand trusted by paint pros for over 100 years. And now, it's your turn. Pro-grade PPG Timeless paint, starting at just $33.98 a gallon. Now, at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. U.S. only, see store for details.
This is John Greenhut, and if your teeth are stained from coffee, tea, or smoking, Power Swabs is the answer. In 5 minutes, you'll see 2 shades whiter teeth, and in 7 days, 6 shades. Even better, there's no messy strips or trays that you have to leave in your mouth for an hour. Just swab your teeth for 5 minutes, and you're done. To try Power Swabs, call 1-800-679-0969. Your bright white smile will have your friends talking about how great you look. Try it risk-free. 1-800-679-0969. That's 1-800-679-0969.
It's time to shop hundreds of specials at Macy's, plus thousands of new markdowns in-store and online. Shop incredible specials like our fine jewelry clearance, 65% off. Sandals for her, 50% off. Save 60% on pillows and comforters. And juniors' dresses, rompers, and more are just $16.99 to $19.99. Or save 10 to 20% with your Macy's card or savings pass. It's time to shop through June 25th at Macy's. Extra savings exclude specials, savings off sale prices, exclusions apply.
Dirty carpets don't keep a schedule. You do. That's why the Home Depot has the Hoover Power Scrub Elite Pet Plus Carpet Cleaner for just $148, over $40 off. Its quick clean mode with heat force helps cut drying time to less than 45 minutes. If you have a schedule to keep, you don't want to sit around waiting on a wet carpet. The Hoover Power Scrub Elite, just $148, only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. U.S. only, Waspa's last, see store for details, valid through July 11th.
You've heard of Murphy's Law, but have you heard of Gervie's Law? Anything that can go wrong can be made right. Now, here are your hosts, Carrie Kasem and Alan Gervie.
No, we're not making light of shooting someone dead, because I'll tell you, It's really intriguing when you watch this series of four standalone episodes in defense of on Oxygen premiering Monday night. You really get a taste of what lawyers go through with some of the most complex brains they're dealing with, which are the accused. And one of those people, Ted Bundy, was really complicated. I know that John Henry Brown had ups and downs with him throughout his representation until he finally said, you know, it really bothered him when Ted Bundy told him that he, you know, the reason why you're my lawyers so long is because we're so much alike.
Oh,
you know, John Henry Brown, tell us what it was like. And of course, in the first segment, you said you can talk about it because somehow Ted Bundy gave you permission through waiving the privilege. And by the way, before you answer that question, let me ask you really quickly, because I'm thinking about this. If he hadn't given you that, now that he's been dead since 1989, what is it? Are you able to talk about your former clients the way that you do on In Defense Of?
Well, you know, that's a good question too. The law on that, I've looked into it for myself and some other attorneys, and that there's pretty much a mixed bag as far as the law is concerned. There's, you know, 50% of the cases in bar associations say the attorney-client privilege dies with the client, and then about 50% of them say that it doesn't. So, you know, if you want to be very conservative, then you don't talk about it. You know, I did write a book. It's actually done fairly well, but much to my surprise. And I talk about a lot of my clients in there, as well as my rock and roll days and walking through the White House at another time and all that sort of stuff. But what I talked about with my other clients in the book was basically things were public record. And so in other words, I didn't go into the details of the attorney-client privilege as much as I did with Ted, because I didn't think it was appropriate.
Well, you know, if you get sued, John, you always have Ann Bremner by your side who can represent you. The book is called.
I'll be there for you, John.
The book is called "The Devil's Defender: My Odyssey Through American Criminal Justice from Ted Bundy to the Kandahar Massacre," and it is a great read. So, folks who are listening, they may want to see what John is talking about. But with the Bundy thing, you really come out and say things that I think go farther than what you did in the book.
That's true, probably. Well, I was very intrigued with this program. You know, both Ann and I, I'm sure Ann may be more than me, but I get asked often to do media things. I don't do as many as Ann does. And so I get a little tired of it from time to time. And when they called me about this program, it intrigued me immediately because, as you said, you know, most TV shows and media things about criminal justice are about the defendants themselves or, you know, prosecutors or victims. Never, I don't think, has anybody done a show, you know, what does it do to your personal life and your private life and your emotions and your spirit to represent people who are very difficult clients. And so when they pitched that to me, I thought it was really interesting. And I'm very, very surprised, to be honest with you, because I think the quality, if you've seen it, then the quality of the show is just amazing to me. So I'm very happy that I did that. You know, representing Ted was a challenge because I never knew exactly what Ted would show up when I was going to visit him or be with him. You know, as I've said before, I never wanted to believe in the concept that people were born evil. I never wanted to believe that. I didn't believe that. I wasn't raised that way. And unfortunately, I had to change my opinion when I met Ted.
Let me ask you this. I want to know why he thought you two were alike. What did you ever ask him, like, hey, why do you think that, Ted?
Maybe well, ask Ann that.
Yeah, maybe ask me.
Oh, no.
I did. One of the last interactions I had with Ted was in Miami in the Hannibal Lecter jail cell. They had him, and you know, he escaped twice.
Yeah.
And I was going to be testifying in the trial, actually, and as a result of my testimony and others, his statements to the police when he was arrested in Florida were suppressed and yada, yada. But in that meeting with Ted, the first time he was ever emotional, that was when he was actually laying on the floor of the jail cell and crying, and he looked up at me and he said, you know, John, I want to be a good person. I'm just not, which is something very rare for a sociopath.
Wow, yeah. Very rare.
But then later on in that 3-hour meeting, I asked him, I told him, I said, you know, when you told me that, I almost not only gave up your case and outing you, but I almost gave up the practice of law.
Yeah.
For anybody to think that I was like Ted, but for Ted to think I was like him, really bothered me. I asked him to explain it, and he said, if he hadn't gone down what he called the dark side, he would have liked to basically be me. And it was still creepy. I mean, that didn't help very much.
But
at least that was his explanation.
Isn't there a point, though, where you kind of divorce yourself from listening to someone like that because you're so focused on what you've said so often, which is ensuring the constitutional rights of everyone, not just everyone but Ted Bundy? Like, wouldn't you be focused on that and not let him get into your head?
Yeah, well, actually, that's really good. I mean, obviously, you're an attorney, and I think I'll only correct one thing you said, is that I've done 250 trials. I've actually done more than 350 trials, and starting another one on Monday, and I have three more this summer, two of which are murder trials. But with Ted, early on, I divorced myself from any sort of personal interaction with him. And, you know, I did give him a plea bargain, which a lot of people don't know, but which is now publicly known as recounted in detail in my book. But myself and Millard Farmer, the fabulous lawyer from Atlanta, Georgia, he and I worked with and basically on Ted for 2 weeks to get him to sign a plea bargain. So we actually got a plea bargain for Ted Bundy to save his life, involved Washington State, Utah, Colorado, and Florida. And he was going to do it, and there's a very dramatic moment. We're walking to the courthouse in Tallahassee, and he turns around to me and says, I'm not going to do it. And that's when Millard and I, but me more than Millard, because he was involved tangentially, but I told Ted in the holding cell after that I wasn't going to help as a lawyer anymore. It was just, you know, he's self-destructive, basically. And I think you can make a very persuasive case that Ted had a death wish, actually. You know, he got caught after his second escape by a 350-pound, 65-year-old policeman. Ted was in the best shape ever because he just escaped from Glenwood Springs. And, you know, he was in incredible shape. And then, you know, when I met him in Aspen after his first escape, during that conversation, he says, if somebody was loose in the United States and murdering people, and where would they be most likely to be executed? Which was a weird question, to say the least. And I said, oh, Florida or Texas. And then when he escapes the second time, where does he go? Florida.
Well, yeah. I think it says something about the mental state when you talk about that. You know, clearly there's a need for attention. There's a need for the game, playing the game. And as lawyers, we know with our clients, a lot of times I look at my clients, and I'm sure Anne would agree, that these people aren't necessarily rational because of these other circumstances, psychological circumstances. And that might explain why he had this kind of death wish, even though it might have been subconscious. And I want to ask you quickly, when we talk about this show In Defense Of, you're right there. Tell us how you got involved and how you see your role, because obviously you didn't represent one of these four people who are featured.
Well, I think that John had recommended me, and my role was more not only that I've known John throughout my whole career in life and that we were married, but I lived through a lot of when the women were disappearing out here in the Northwest in the late 70s. And also I represented Ann Rule, who wrote the definitive book one of the most definitive books on Ted Bundy other than John's, called The Stranger Beside Me. Now, she knew him and worked with him at a crisis clinic before he started, or maybe in the midst of his killing spree. So those were some of the markers that they were interested in, and then finally just being a legal analyst. But and I think I lived through, you know, with John, we talked a lot about, you know, these kinds of cases. And I think that Ted wanted to be John, and he was in law school, remember, here and in Utah. He's very handsome like John. People describe John as swashbuckling and brilliant. I mean, he had the role by the tail. He worked for the governor, Dan Adams, one of our most popular governors. You know, he went to Stanford first summer. This is all Ted Bundy.
Wow.
This is the person that did all these, you know, committed all these heinous murders. And yet, you know, and think about this too historically, we didn't have these kind of murderers that looked like Ted Bundy. You know, he was one of the first. You say, handsome, smart, law student, connected, well-raised, and yet, you know, he had a horrific dark side, one of the worst serial killers in the history of our country.
Do you call?
And I think people forget that when you look at what he represented back at that time.
Now, in the series, are you commenting on Timothy McVeigh and Doyle of the Branch Davidians and Jodi Arias, or are you focused mostly on Bundy?
Mostly on Bundy, and I also have to echo your sentiments. I think John's book is excellent, and I think I recommend everyone read it, because he doesn't talk just about Ted's case, but he talks about a number of cases that he's handled over the years and how they have a toll on him. But I think it's remarkable that he and Millard Farmer had a plea deal for Ted Bundy that saved his life in all those states.
You know, John, I have to ask you, when Ann talks about your book, and something that comes up in your book is, and I don't know how to put this mildly, but you've become an expert in shifting a focus to the background of the defendant and talking about who they are, what they've gone through, where their mindset is. A lot of people have criticized you for that because it takes away from the focus from the victims. How do you respond to that?
Well, thank you. I mean, first of all, I think that may be true. There's certainly true with Sergeant Bales. I never thought I could save his life, and I did. Leon Panetta called for death penalty. We did that. I certainly did that with Colton Harris Moore, the Barefoot Bandit. But, you know, the thing is, and Ann and I have talked to this many times in the past, and that, you know, we are all fallen angels. There's no question about it. I think the people are interested in true crime so much. I mean, like normal, more or less normal people interested in true crime, because everybody knows that they've got a dark side. And so, you know, to some extent, we're all fallen angels. At one point, that was the title of my book. I hope I answered that question. I would like to mention one thing, and that is one of the lawyers on the show and myself, when we were in Durek last week, were talking about the hardest case for us, and would probably agree with this, our clients who are innocent. Because the stress level on us goes through the roof.
Yeah.
And I'm about to embark on a couple of those. Because, you know that, first of all, it's harder and harder to get a fair trial. We have a lot less freedoms than we did 30 years ago. And it's really difficult. And if you've got an innocent client, your stress level as a defense lawyer goes through the roof. So I think that's important.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point, and I'm sure Ann would talk at length about Amanda Knox case when you bring up that point, because that's relevant. We have to take a quick break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Talk Radio 790 KABC News Update. I'm Steve Cumming. Politicians and friends from across the country are sending thoughts and prayers to Republican U.S. House candidate Katie Arrington after she was seriously injured in a car crash in South Carolina. Women in Saudi Arabia can legally get behind the wheel of a car for the first time tomorrow as the kingdom lifts its long-standing ban on women driving. And a judge's light sentence for a man convicted of multiple sexual assaults, stalking and choking women at the University of Wisconsin in Madison is drawing outrage. Alec Cook admitted he stalked, choked, and sexually assaulted women on campus. He could have been given nearly 40 years for the felonies. Instead, he got just 3 years in prison. Cook apologized Thursday in court and admitted the women he raped all told the truth. KABC SoCal weather, sunny this afternoon with highs from the mid-60s to around 70 at the beaches to the mid-70s to around 80 inland. More news coming up and continuous coverage on KABC.com. I'm Steve Cumming, Talk Radio 790, KABC News.
Dirty carpets don't keep a schedule. You do. That's why the Home Depot has the Hoover Power Scrub Elite Pet Plus Carpet Cleaner for just $148, over $40 off. Its quick clean mode with Heat Force helps cut drying time to less than 45 minutes. If you have a schedule to keep, you don't want to sit around waiting on a wet carpet. The Hoover Power Scrub Elite, just $148, only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. U.S. only, while supplies last. See store for details, valid for July 11th.
Are you enjoying restful nights and radiant days? If you need help getting that quality sleep your body depends on, Quantum Nutrition Labs has two key supplements that help manage an overactive mind and promote deep, restful REM sleep. Melatonin PG and Quantum Sleep. For a limited time, buy two bottles and get the third one free. Relax and rest. Call 888-588-7578. That's 888-588-7578. Or visit us online at qnlabs.com. That's qnlabs.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Bob Marshall, PhD, host of Healthline. Tune in to get your questions answered and hear the latest breakthrough information for you and your family. Our product line, Quantum Nutrition Labs, delivers what others only promise, nutrition that really works.
Napa Know-How. Right now, a three-pack of Peak microfiber cloths is just $1.99. But they're not just inexpensive, they're innovative. After all, they clean and dry and polish and support our troops. Because for every purchase of Peak microfiber cloths for $1.99, we'll make a donation to the Intrepid Fallen Heroes Fund. That's no average cloth. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa Know-How.
Napa Know-How.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores. Offer expires 6/30/18.
You're listening to Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
I'm not willing to lay down and die because I am an innocent man.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure they're all innocent men. The four people that in defense of the oxygen standalone episodes deal with: Ted Bundy, Tim McVeigh, Doyle. What's his first name? That guy, the Branch Davidian guy.
Clive.
I noticed Megan. I feel like Megan Kelly because she called him Clive Owen the whole time. So I, when you were on that show with Megan Kelly, all she did was call him Clive Owen. And it's Clive Doyle of the Branch Davidians, and that's Dan Cogdell, who's the attorney who represented Doyle. And then, of course, who we've been talking about, Jody Arias. We're talking to John Henry Brown and Ann Bremner, two of probably the nicest people in law and smartest and toughest. It shows you can be smart, tough, and very nice at the same time, and both of them are just that. It's on Oxygen. If you don't see it on the Crime Time lineup on Oxygen, you can watch In Defense Of on Oxygen.com, Oxygen.com. Carrie, I know you had a question for John.
I did. I wanted to know, how do you know when your clients are innocent? You know, because you said it's very hard when you're representing innocent clients. How do you know?
Well, you know, after you do so many trials and you have so much experience, I mean, you know, 350 trials and counting, and I won half of them.
Right.
And, you know, that's not just because I'm a brilliant lawyer all the time or part of the time. It's because the government files some really dumb cases. And then let me answer that fully, too, because I don't like being known as Ted Bundy's lawyer. And that's one of the reasons I decided I was thinking about not doing this show, because I really get tired of that. I'd much rather be known as the lawyer who created the law in the United States of America for battered women. So, you know, I represented Claudia Thacker and Ivy Kelly, and we established nationally the concept of battered woman syndrome. So there's the question. I can answer your question like that. At self-defense cases, Claudia and Ivy should have been given medals for killing their abusive alcoholic husband.
Right.
Instead, they were prosecuted and both were in prison when I met them. And by the time I was done with them, they were out and free and living full lives. And I established that law. So, you know, guilt is a degree to some extent. I love, and I think Anne does this when she's on the side of the fence, and that is, I love standing between individuals and the government. I have the perfect job for an anti-authoritarian person, which I am.
Now, may be true, John, but do you think that the unfortunate murder of your girlfriend in 1970s at Berkeley did that really give you the passion and the commitment to fight against these horrible crimes against women and crimes against children and people in general?
Well, you know, I'm never quite sure how that factors in. It certainly sets me apart, I think, from most defense lawyers in that I was actually the victim of a crime. The only woman I was involved with and who I cared deeply about was murdered in Berkeley when I was in law school in Washington, D.C. And I became pretty much pro-death penalty. I thought about becoming a prosecutor, God forgive. That's how crazy it was. And I'm not a person that has a lot of powerful dreams or that kind of stuff, but I had this dream when I was in graduate school in Chicago when Debbie came to me and said, "Don't honor me by believing in things I never believed in." And that dream actually turned my whole career, my whole life around. And to a certain extent, when I do this work, she's behind it every day.
Wow.
So
that's powerful.
You know, it's hard for people to understand that. I mean, you know, at the same time I'm representing Ted Bundy, I'm representing battered women and establishing law at the same time.
Yeah.
And then I'm also been the victim of a crime. So, you know, it's just, as I told the New York Times when they interviewed me one time, I probably can't swear on your program, but you can figure it out. And they were saying, why are you a defense lawyer? And I said, because it's my blinking path. This is the hard. I mean, I go to law schools and talk people out of doing this job. It's, and then if you add to it the fact that the love of my life at that time was murdered, and you know, I still have, and Sir Ann does too, we still have a hard time looking at autopsy pictures or going to crime scenes, but it's my path. This is what, if somebody asked me in this segment, I mean, in this go around on media things, if you come back in another lifetime, do you want to do what you did all over again? And I said, hell no. I said, I want somebody else to do it as well as I do it.
Right.
But I don't want it to be me. I don't want it to be me. I've done it. I paid my dues.
Sometimes these things just happen. You know, we have Gloria Allred on the show quite often, and her past includes a rape, a violent rape in Mexico when she was young. And, you know, again, I think she draws on that. And I know you haven't had that dramatic an experience, but can you identify with what John's saying from your own perspective? And when you look at these cases, you're commenting on them. Where does your passion come from?
You know, it's similar, but, you know, I'm a real underdog person. You know, I always feel sorry for the victim, the underdog, the person that isn't understood. You know, I lost a parent when I was young, and I think part of that factored into my path, which was, you know, Amanda Knox. I mean, everybody was out there just pillaring her, you know. And I'm here in Seattle. I do television. It was like, and I looked at all the evidence, and I'm like, this is totally innocent. And I'm driven that way. You know, there's something in me that has had this complete, you know, sympathy, you know, for people that are underdogs and that they aren't being helped. And so I'm similar to John in having a path, but mine's much more kind of a empathy, compassion. And I don't know where really that comes from other than the way I was raised and maybe losing a parent. And my psychiatrist, you know, and so maybe it's part of that, you know, that I want to see what makes people tick. I want to, you know, help people out. I want things to be balanced. I want people's lives to be good. I want everyone to be happy. I'm kind of more that way. And if I was, you know, to come back to another life, I'd probably do exactly the same thing.
This is a question for both of you.
Maybe that's why you guys got divorced. You know, you both wanted to come back as something else.
No, she'd do the same. No, she'd do the same thing. He'd be something else. Yeah. Question.
They'd probably still be married.
Maybe.
Yeah,
maybe. Yeah. I want to know if John and Ann, if there was a case that, looking back now, that you wouldn't have taken, would you have taken on Ted Bundy, if you knew, you know, everything you would have had to go through? And Anne, is there somebody else that you may not have taken on?
Well, for me, this is John. This is obviously John, because Anne has so much nicer.
Thank you. But, see, that's why you're the top lawyer in the country.
There you go.
Well, and also to amplify what Anne said a minute ago, is I think really, and I don't mean this in a patronizing way at all, but Anne, you probably know, is actually one of the smartest people in the world.
Yes.
So, I mean, Anne can look at the evidence and can analyze the evidence and say, wait a minute, this is a bunch of crap. One way or the other, or the victim. But, you know, she and I both know Amanda Knox, and there's no question in my mind that Amanda was innocent. And it's important for the United States viewers, your listeners, to realize in Italy, you're actually presumed innocent, presumed guilty. So, you know, we have a huge, you know, somebody asked me recently, what would you do if you were Donald Trump's lawyer? And I said, first thing I would do is to tell him to shut up. And the second thing I do is to tell him to just say over and over again, I am entitled to the presumption of innocence, even though I'm president, and say it over and over and over again. And I think it might work because he is. You know, putting my everything else aside, he certainly, if Ted Bundy is entitled to the presumption of innocence, well, then so is Donald Trump. So
good point.
Would I take Ted's case? I would take Ted's case again. I would take anybody's case who's facing the death penalty if I could afford it. You know, I've gone bankrupt, almost bankrupt. I mean, when I did Sergeant Bales' case, which was only 4 years ago, I was supporting 9 people, and we put 2,500 hours of pro bono time into that case.
Wow.
So you can figure out.
Yeah.
And a lot of the gentlemen on the show in defense of are the same. I was blown away. They've been the same way. Timothy McVeigh won, by the way. Let me give that a compliment. I, of course, assumed mine was going to be the best segment. And not. The McVeigh one is amazing. But all of the lawyers on that show do what they did for the best principles of our profession.
Yeah.
And they don't always make a lot of money. And, you know, I live in a small apartment. I have a 12-year-old car that I love. But, you know, I don't make a lot of money. And you can imagine.
You know, people do not understand that, and I'm so happy you made that point, John.
Wow.
You know.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
we
really.
Go ahead.
No, you're
the guest.
Thank you. I was really enjoyed meeting these people last week. I don't know them. We actually ran into and had lunch with Barry Scheck, and I don't know if you know that.
Yeah.
We ran into Barry Scheck. Believe it or not, where did we run into Barry Scheck? In front of the New York Stock Exchange. But
that's funny.
We ended up spending some time with him, but he's certainly one of my heroes. I hope he's been on your show.
Yes.
We've had
all OJ lawyers on our show.
Well, but this project is really, really important. And we are finding out more and more. The government's own statistics from the Department of Justice say that about 5% of the people that are in prison are probably innocent. That's the Department of Justice. In Washington State, that would be 900 people.
Wow.
And that's an outrage.
Yeah, that's true.
And I know Anne would do defense work when she wanted to and believed in the innocence of somebody, but it really does raise your blood pressure when you've got an innocent person in your hands.
Yeah, that's true. You know, we're going to have to stop it here. It's just fascinating. I know all our listeners would love to hear for another couple of hours. Just, you know, you're on the front lines. The show is called In Defense Of. It's really something that people have seen. Now, you are on your show on Ted Bundy's, the fourth one in the series of four. Is that correct?
That's true. Yes.
Yeah. So it's sometime in July. The first one will air June 25th, Monday, but every Monday. And you can also see it on oxygen.com. John Henry Brown and Bremner, thank you so much. It's just been a real enlightening time for us to hear about the behind the scenes perspective of these really incredibly historical cases.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, and nice to talk to you, Ann.
Yeah, I'm glad we were able to bring you two together again, and I know you are great friends. So, Ann, thanks.
Well, we see each other often. It's been a great opportunity knowing each other, I think.
All right, good luck in your trial on Monday, John, and we'll talk to you again.
Thank you. Thank you, buddy. Bye, Ann.
Okay, we're going to have to take a quick break. We'll be right back. You listen to Gervais Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
The Online Trading Academy is a leader in investing education designed to generate monthly income and grow your retirement nest egg. Today you can register for a free half-day class at one of OTA's financial education centers throughout Southern California, including Woodland Hills, Westwood, and Irvine, offered conveniently around your schedule. I'm so impressed with the Online Trading Academy that I've signed up for my own class, and you can too. Give them a call at 888-991-TRADE. That's 888-991-8723 to attend and get two free passes to their next half-day class. half-day class so you can check all of it out. And if you call right now, they'll send you home with a free Kindle Fire 7 tablet computer with access to their do-it-yourself investors kit just for attending. It's loaded with exclusive investing courses and some of their best lessons from the pros. This is a limited-time opportunity, and seats go fast, so call right now. 888-991-TRADE, 888-991-TRADE, or visit them online at freetabletota.com. That's freetabletota.com. Tablet offers while supplies last, must be 18 years of age or older, and one tablet per household.
Napa Know-How.
Right now, a three-pack of Peak microfiber cloths is just $1.99. But they're not just inexpensive, they're innovative. After all, they clean and dry and polish and support our troops. Because for every purchase of Peak microfiber cloths for $1.99, we'll make a donation to the Intrepid Fallen Heroes Fund. That's no average cloth. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa Know-How.
Napa Know-How.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores. Offer expires 6/30/18.
Dirty carpets don't keep a schedule. You do. That's why the Home Depot has the Hoover Power Scrub Elite Pet Plus Carpet Cleaner for just $148, over $40 off. Its quick clean mode with Heat Force helps cut drying time to less than 45 minutes. If you have a schedule to keep, you don't want to sit around waiting on a wet carpet. The Hoover Power Scrub Elite, just $148, only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. U.S. only. Waspa's last C-store for details. Valid through July 11th.
Need some legal, moral, or just common sense advice from a friend? Call Alan Gervey and Kerry Kasem now at 800-222-KABC. That's 800-222-5222.
Psycho killer.
You're listening to Gervey's Law. Yeah, it's a good song. I'm Kerry Kasem. I'm here with Alan Gervey. I haven't brought us in so long. I think maybe in the last 5 years, it's two or three times I've ever opened the show. Or as you sit back in your chair. Oh, we had a great segment with Ann Bremner and John Henry. Every time I think of John Henry Brown, I think of the racehorse John Henry. All right. Our next guest, very excited about this. I love cop shows. I can't even tell you how much I do. I'm obsessed with them. And we've got Nan Twigg. She's a cop with the Stockton PD. She's also on Lifetime's Live PD, Women on Patrol. Nan, you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Hi there. Thanks for joining us today.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So tell us, first of all, what's it like being a cop with cameras following you everywhere?
For myself, it's not that difficult because, I mean, we're filmed all the time anyway, regardless of whether it's our body cameras rolling or someone standing there with a cell phone. So it really wasn't much difference to me.
You don't feel safer because now you have this crew. And then if anybody, you know, I mean, people, I think when they see cameras, they tend to act a little better. I could be wrong, but it seems like maybe you're not going to get shot when the cameras are rolling because then you have the guy's face there.
maybe not. People react so different to the cameras. Some people love it.
Yeah.
And they'll start kind of flaunting and fixing their hair or their shirt. And some people get, you know, really mad and tell them that they need to, you know, get the F out of here and don't film me. So it all depends on the person that's standing in front of the camera.
And I just want to know, because it's so interesting. We have people on the show all the time. And obviously you worked really hard to become a police officer. And then all of a sudden you're in the limelight. You're on the show and Live PD has been such a huge success. And this is kind of like a spinoff, more like a documentary versus live show. But, how do you feel about that? Do you start getting a little diverted? Does your head get a little bigger and you're not thinking about being a cop, but you're thinking about being a television star?
Oh, absolutely not. No.
Right answer. That's the right answer.
I don't do that on a daily basis. No.
What being a cop, you know, what was going into this? You don't think, oh, I'm going to be on TV. I'm going to be a TV star now. What was the impetus? Why did you want to become a cop?
Police officer.
Police officer. Cop is cooler.
No, it
is. Police officer.
What do you want to be known
Come on,
as?
She's a cop. I like that. This thing is so cool. Anyway, yeah, I want to know what was that for you?
So for myself, I always really looked up to my father, and my father worked for Alameda County Sheriff's Office for 30 plus years, mm-hmm. retired there, worked his whole career there. And I always was very appreciative of his partners who made sure that, you know, my dad came home at the end of the day, right. and they watched his back. And as I got older and actually was able to realize how much, you know, really does go on and what police officers deal with, I wanted to be that for somebody else. Right. I wanted somebody else, whether they knew it or not, just I wanted to make sure that each and every person goes home to their family at the end of the day. Because that's what I was so happy about, that they were there for my dad.
What about you going home at the end of the day? Do you ever get scared? Have you ever had situations where you thought, I may not make it out of this?
I've definitely had scenarios that play out a lot different. But I've always been the type of person that's more of a protector. I don't really worry about myself so much. I mostly worry about other people.
Wow.
And so
that's amazing.
I'll do what I need to do to make sure that they go home.
You know, to hear that makes so many people feel so much safer, especially when with the big dog in the background. That also helps.
Sorry, you know, I would be my shepherd.
So cute.
Yeah, it sounds great. I want to ask about being a woman in the force, because it's a male dominated field, and you've said on the show, in the media, you said women can do this job sometimes even better, obviously referring to a man. Tell us what mm-hmm. you mean by that.
By that, I believe that women have a lot more of an ability to determine the emotions going on within a situation, and then learning how to address the situation without antagonizing those emotions. We have a more nurturing sense, and in certain scenarios that works out a lot better than just, hey, what happened? Okay. Here's your report number. Bye.
Right.
Because women naturally have a little bit more emotions to us, we can actually give a little bit more comfort without even realizing it. Just in the soft tone in our voice or talking to them. But at the same time, we also have that motherly instinct to where we can figure out that something's not right.
You know, I love the fact you're saying this.
And address it.
Yeah. Because what you're doing is you're pointing out differences between men and women, but in a positive light. And I think you're right that you can take some of the natural abilities and predispositions of women and use that to your advantage, especially in law enforcement, because there are so many difficult situations. When you talk about the show, what do you tell your friends? Do you tell them to watch, and what should they watch for?
I mean, I've told my friends and my family about the show, and I just think it's really cool getting to see the different ways of handling things. Like the way someone here in California would handle stuff rather than someone in Wyoming, and seeing the differences and just picking and choosing different styles and how different things are depending on where you are, you know, in the country.
When you say that in the country, have you had any issues with racial questions? Because obviously that's been in the forefront, especially with police. And we just had on the show Anne Bremner, who has represented police officers in the state of Washington. And they have always issues with the races. Are you dealing with that in Stockton?
No. Because Stockton is so diverse, we have, you know, multiple different races, ethnicities, creeds, everything. For myself, I don't care who you are. All I care about is like, what can I do to make this better? Can, you know, if you're doing something wrong, how can I take you off the street so that people are safer? Or if you're a victim, what happened? How can I figure out to help you or get you resources or, you know, catch the suspect? It's for myself. I've never had an issue with it.
What's something that stands out in your mind? Something that happened to you on patrol, a story that you would, you know, tell your kid?
Um, I have a pretty funny one.
Okay. We only have about 60 seconds, so do it fast.
When I was in the training program, we got sent to a call to a naked man running down the street, and he was about 6'3", about 240. He was a pretty large man, and he charged one of our sergeants. He got tased, jumped on him, got him cuffed up, and he ended up spitting on one of the officers.
Oh, man.
We ended up having to take him to the hospital because he was tased. And whenever a male officer tried to calm him down and, like, tell him, like, hey, buddy, just sit down, I would just put my hand on his shoulder and just say his name, and then he would just calm down. Aww. And I don't know why. But for me, it was just the funniest thing.
Was he naked the whole time?
I'll carry one.
Yes. He was naked up until we got to the hospital.
I hope you covered him up. We'll have to revisit that next time. Nan Twigg, thanks so much for being on Gervie's Law. The show is Live PD, Women on Patrol on Lifetime. It's on Lifetime, Women on Patrol. Thanks for being with us today, Nan. And she says thank you, and I say thank you to all of you.
Turn her on.
Have a great week. We'll see you next week right here on Gervie's Law.
This show furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.